from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday to all of you. G is off today, and look who's here. It is Spike O'Neill. How you doing?
I'm fabulous. Good morning to you. Good morning to you.
Thank you so much for coming in. So
I didn't come in. I slept downstairs in Michael Medved's office.
I was going to ask you, because you were just here a few hours ago. You were a champ.
Well, I spoke to Michael, of course, ahead of time before I did this, but I sleep in Michael Medved's office on nights that I work overnights, and then the next morning. Do you know he has a hot tub in his office? Did you know that? It's amazing.
I wish.
So he's like, yeah, I knew
so
that.
Are y'all snowed in today, or did you wake up and go, what was the big deal? Well, we're going to get you all caught up on the latest forecast, because apparently we're not done. So we'll help you prepare for the next storm if you weren't prepared this time around. As always, we want you to connect with us, 888-973-5476. 888-973-CHIRO is our state roofing text line. Let's get to it. Our top stories brought to you by Economy Fence Center. And as promised, the snow came, and there is more on the way, but it this time is going to be mixed with rain in round two. And this guy in Linwood tells Cairo 7 TV he actually spent much of yesterday driving around in search of the most snow.
We were downtown this morning in West Seattle. It was snowing, and went over to Bellevue and it stopped, and we went over to Snoqualmie and it was like 2 inches, and then we came back to Seattle and there wasn't any snow, and then we got back up here into Linwood and or Edmonds Linwood, and it's like we got snow up here, so it's great.
Gotta appreciate the dedication there. Storm warnings are in effect for King, Snohomish, Pierce, Lewis, Whatcom, and Skagit counties until 4 this afternoon. Some areas, Spike, I'm told, on the east side could see up to 7 inches of snow.
What?
Up to 4 inches to our north, but the city of Seattle might get less than a half inch. So how'd you do?
It's so funny around here. The elevation of your home dictates how much shoveling or plowing you have to do. We are literally 4 blocks from a neighborhood that got 4 inches. We're going downhill toward the sea level. Up near, south of Edmonds. We're in the convergence zone. And we got about 2 inches, maybe 3 inches last night, but it turned to rain at our house.
Yeah.
And it was all washed away by this morning. I got out to start the car early, you know, get ready to come in and do what I had to do. Car was completely clear. Roads were completely clear at my house. I drive up the hill, literally 2 blocks from my house, 4 inches of snow, power outage. We had power flicker last night, just enough to reset every clock in the house. The most annoying kind of power outage. Well, no, people who were out of power for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little worse. My next door neighbor is on a different power grid than I am. I don't know how, but we live on a cul-de-sac, a dead-end street, and literally directly across the fence from my house, there have been times when he's had power we haven't.
Uh-huh.
Tonight, we had power he didn't.
So you get along, and then you invite each other if you're out.
We do check in on each other at moments like this, especially if it comes to be a day or more without power. Yeah, I've been in... You know, pulled the old Wilson from Home Improvement. How you doing there, neighbor? Want to borrow some candles? Cup of soup?
That's awesome.
You know?
Well, in the middle of last night, we found out that G wasn't going to be here today. Then I got another text, and it was from Chef, said, my power's out.
Oh.
So how'd you do?
It was amazing. I absolutely love this weather. It's incredible. First of all, I mean, I spent the afternoon building snowmen with my kids.
Heaven!
And then Matthew destroyed them all with a baseball bat.
Nice.
But
very Calvin and Hobbes.
I love inclement weather. And yeah. I was expecting, you know, snow. I was not expecting fireworks last night because it started sticking on the roads in Edmonds around 5 p.m. I'm up at the top of the hill. I'm not down in the bowl. And then around 8 p.m. last night, it just starts coming down thick and heavy and wet. And I start hearing trees popping and exploding. And all of a sudden, I thought it was lightning strikes that we were getting. No, they're transformers blowing up. And I think we probably saw about 50, 60 flashes last night.
Kidding.
Even this morning. If you want to get a little taste of what this sounded like, you can also check out the video on the G and Ursula Show Facebook page. But this was my house last night, just looking out from the back window.
There we go. Oh my gosh.
Are those branches creaking and breaking?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. I mean, and it was going on like that for a couple hours. You know, if you just walk out into the street, you can see massive limbs coming down everywhere. Thank goodness we don't have any giant trees by our house.
Yeah.
Oh, It's amazing. I love it.
I love your positivity about it. And I know that you said that Matthew woke up this morning, took out the flashlight.
He's
and
out was before out. 6 a.m. with a flashlight in the yard,
nice.
Playing in the snow.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, it's great.
I love
but
it.
I have to say, we did get power back this morning. There are a lot of folks who do not, right. tens
yes.
of thousands throughout the region.
Yes.
So I just wanted to give a shout out to the
yeah.
folks that that work
well,
on the lines.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
absolutely.
Clearing
and,
the roads, working the lines. You bet, man.
As of this morning, I just checked. So tens of thousands of homes and businesses are still mm-hmm. without power because of the storm. And I want to know, is yours one of them? Text us 888-973-5476 888-973 Cairo. We'll keep you company. Seattle City Light has about 13,000 customers without electricity right now. Puget Sound Energy is working to restore power to more than 24,000. Of course, we know this is the time of year when you get power outages, but are you prepared to be without electricity for a couple of days or even a week? And I ask it that way because my own answer is no. So the person who's shaking his head right now is Chris Sullivan, Sully, who joins us. I said, I am going to take this as my sign that let's not go through another winter not prepared. So what should I have?
Well, first of all, I am not Dave Ross. Okay, Dave actually has supplies for a nuclear winter, pretty much. I think he's got enough to get things for weeks, months, if he needed to, with the freeze dry and all that, you know, all that stuff. I can't believe that you didn't know where your flashlights were, or you didn't know if you had candles.
No. I said, I will probably be, you know, searching around. I know where the flashlight is, but, you know.
Are the batteries fresh?
The flashlight? You have
the
one?
The flashlight? I know, I love it.
Or maybe there are a couple.
I'm good.
Okay.
I got 100 candles, not a match in the house.
It's ridiculous, and I outed myself because
yes,
I'm like,
you did.
I want this to be an opportunity for all of us who yeah. just assume that the lights are going to turn on.
Right.
So,
the first thing that I started doing this a while ago, just because you know it's just smart. Is that you know I pre-position a bunch of different flashlights around the house, both handheld and headlamp. Headlamp flashlights are the greatest thing ever. I started using them when I was a Boy Scout, and I used them when I was doing Boy Scouts with Tommy, and I just pre-position them around the house so I can just grab and throw them on my head and away I go. My brother actually has a set of glasses that has lights on either on the side of them, so he looks like you know some an alien coming at you
in the
dark.
Say night vision goggles.
But no, so in other words,
the family.
Last night when it started hitting, our power started to flicker a little bit, so much so that I reached over to grab the set of headlamps that I have in the kitchen right next to the stove so that I could put them on it because I was making tacos last night and I was in the middle of browning beef and I didn't want the power to go out, but I have a gas stove, so I knew the gas would keep going, so I just grabbed my headlight ready to go. I've got one of those at the front by the table where I put my keys along with a handheld flashlight. I've got one in each one of the bathrooms just in case, you know, last thing you want to be doing is going into the bathroom and the lights go out, so it's nice to be able to grab. So you pre-position your flashlights. Make sure their batteries are full. Now,
amen.
I don't have a generator like, you know, some people do because it never usually is out that long. But if it is, you know, we'll find ways to get around it. But yeah, just a little simple thing like getting a couple of flashlights and pre-positioning them around the house so you don't have to search for them. You know where they are.
Yeah.
I mean, I kept one in each one of the bedroom by the nightstands on each one of our bed, you know, just ready to go.
Nice.
It's just simple stuff like that.
Okay, so you've got the flashlights. What else?
Well, you know, and also I've got a lot of canned food too, if I needed to. And again, we have a gas range, so we could turn it on and I could you know light it pretty easily. It's not that big of a deal, you know. So I keep just a little bit of stuff around. But yeah, just when the lights go out, you want the ability to see. And so I found there's just a simple thing around the house. Now, if you're in a car, because obviously I spend a lot of time talking about what to do in your car or whatnot. Again, a lot of different flashlights in your car too. Make sure their batteries are prepared
yeah.
and they work, you know, water, blankets, other stuff like that. This time of year, there's nothing wrong with having things in your trunk or in your back seat. It's okay because there are people that got stranded last night. I saw their cars this morning as
them.
I was driving
yeah.
around. And if you're waiting for a tow at that time of the morning, I mean, you make sure, I mean, you want to be safe and you want to be warm and, you know, just little things like that. A couple of minutes to prep a little kit, put it in the back seat of the car, put it in the trunk, and you're good. I mean, it just takes a little bit of planning.
Thank you, Sully.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that you mentioned it a couple minutes ago, Ursula, that for some folks, nothing happened. at all where they were. Nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
And some folks are without power. Their roads are blocked with down lines.
Yeah.
It's amazing how different it can
be
from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Yeah. And it was weird this year, just I know we're kind of moving on a little bit, but it seems like west of I-5 in that convergence zone, but in North Kings, South Snohomish, got it worse than the east side. I'm east of I-5, and I usually get more than the west side. And this year, the script was flipped a little bit. I don't know why. A very interesting storm. It kind of depended on where it was. But I barely got an inch in our neighborhood last night.
And this was just the first. So we're going to have Ted Bean, our resident meteorologist, join us next hour. So
you said the east side's going to get 7 inches?
Well, that's
with the property
skeptical.
Taxes
some
they
parts.
Pay, how is that allowed to happen?
Exactly. I think some areas, I'm guessing, like
some
really,
of us pay more for the extra inches of snow. Yeah,
there you go.
You got a lift chair though, so
just,
it helps.
I just know that if all else fails, I'm going to Sully's house. That's the lesson there.
Cool.
Okay, here's another one of our top headlines. King County is now demanding to get its money back. They want to get reimbursed from the state for housing an inmate named Alexander J. He has been at the county jail waiting for court-ordered mental health treatment for nearly 8 months. He is the man who is accused of attacking and throwing a nurse down the steps of a light rail station in Seattle in March. He's also facing a murder charge. And according to a federal ruling, he was supposed to get treatment at a DSHS mental health facility months ago. Cairo 7 TV reports the state has already been ordered to pay over $50,000 because his rights are being violated. And now, in a motion that was just filed yesterday, King County is asking DSHS to pay about $220 for every day past May 9th, which is the date that he was supposed to be transported. And the county is also asking the state to pay out in 6 other criminal cases.
About time. What other way do you get people motivated to do the job they're paid to do than to start hitting them in the pocketbook? They obviously haven't done it because it was the thing to do, because it was legislatively required for them to do this, and nothing's been done. And I know it's easy not to feel any sympathy for a guy who's committed violent crimes, multiple violent crimes, and is now back in jail again under, is it a murder charge he's being charged
with? He's got a murder charge and
but in the interim,
an assault charge.
Right, in the interim, he was supposed to be receiving mental health care. So all these
he's claiming that he's mentally incompetent to stand trial. So
I think given the fact of his career of violent criminal activities, it's pretty evident he is mentally unfit. He does need mental health care. Well, I don't know either. Yeah. But he hasn't been assessed by professionals.
Yeah, that's
who would
the issue.
Know.
So why not act like it's, you know, hair on fire? I've said this before. Why not act like it's hair on fire and get him the treatment that he's supposed to have so that you're not just county's asking for money from the state. The state's paying out because judges are hacked off about it. It's like, address this problem.
He's
a poster boy for who should be getting the treatment.
Exactly. And the state was supposed to provide the funding, the resources to have these mental health evaluations done, to have this mental health care provided, and they don't do it.
Yeah.
How else are you going to get their attention except for pulling on the purse strings?
Yeah, and a senior deputy prosecutor with the King County Prosecutor's Office had told Cairo 7 as they were doing this investigative report, they're saying, you know, in some cases we're waiting 7 or 8 months for people to get into treatment. 7 to 8 months.
And these are the people who are repeat offenders, who are kicked back out of the system, get back on the streets, and people then wonder why we have a continuing problem with these types of individuals committing act after act after act, because we're not giving them the proper assessment. I'm not saying sympathize for people who commit violent crimes, but figure out if they have a situation in their mind where they just can't be rehabilitated.
If in the case of this guy, if he's, you know, his attorney has figured out a way to kind of
keep him out of the system.
Don't allow that to happen. Like this is
right.
This
no,
is,
give him the tests, give him the evaluations,
exactly.
Move through the system. You know, you're claiming that with your defense attorney, but you don't qualify by medical assessment. Get your ass into jail.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this is just infuriating. And you look at it, and now it's the county asking for money, $220 a day because he's in jail. And you know, is that going to give him a sense of urgency?
Well, when you now it's multiple cases. They're going after multiple patients, multiple suspects.
Defendants.
Thank you. I'm trying to find the proper terminology for these people. These wonderful people who just need our help. And some people are not going to be helped. Yeah. Some people, no matter the amount of mental health assessment or care you give them, they're going to be who they are and who they've become. And at that point, okay, fine, put you somewhere where you cannot be a threat to the society, the city, the citizenry, and get you the help you need, or at least get you the bars you need.
Well, that is actually a perfect segue to my tease ahead for what is coming up at 9:30, because the question would be, and I want to hear from all of you listening right now, when it comes to seriously mentally ill people who are living on the streets, should they be forced into treatment? Should they face involuntary treatment? And that is what is going to be happening in one very major city. And we'll talk about that coming up at 9:30. You're listening to the G and Ursula Show right now with Spike O'Neill. G and Ursula Show with Spike O'Neill today. Thank you so much for joining us. Text us at 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Spike, I know you get a chance to check out the text line. I gotta just love the intelligence of our listeners. I'm always just so thrilled when I see the interaction and see what people text in.
Are you? it's different when the sun's up, I guess. No, I'm kidding. I kid. No, you know what? I know that the text line represents a very small percentage of our audience. And the most engaged.
Yes, it is very engaged.
They're passionate about their opinions and their beliefs. And we often get into heated discussions in the evening hours with our text audience.
Yeah.
But I have a goal every night to leave the show smarter than I showed up. And with this text audience,
it happens. I agree.
They provide, whenever I'm wrong, when my foot's in it, they help me put that foot directly in my own mouth.
That's what I love.
It works great. But I do appreciate.
So I want you to interact with us, though, because this is a dilemma that is facing so many big cities, including Seattle. What do you do with severely mentally ill people who are living on the streets? And in New York, Mayor Eric Adams is now directing police and medics to be more aggressive about getting them off the streets and subways and into treatment, even if it means involuntarily hospitalizing some people who refuse care.
We can no longer deny the reality that untreated psychosis can be a cruel and all-consuming condition that often requires involuntary intervention.
And the mayor's announcement is already being condemned, of course, by some civil rights groups and advocates for the homeless. But Mayor Adams says,
if severe mental illness is causing someone to be unsheltered and a danger to themselves, we have a moral obligation to help them get the treatment and care they need.
God, I wish this guy could rent a house in Georgia and run for the Senate. I really do. For those people who are in the ACLU, the NYCLU, who are saying this is inhumane treatment of the homeless, so your argument is leaving these people who need mental health care to fend for themselves in the cruelties of the streets of New York, that's humane? Are you kidding?
Exactly.
This is exactly what defund the police. This is our opportunity to go back and correct an error, to get back on course. We can all agree that defund the police was the worst marketing campaign of all time.
Yes.
That was up there with Tu Brute. I mean, it's horrible.
Yes.
But to support the police with the kind of resources that help mental health evaluations take place at the scene of contact, the point of contact on the streets, to get people who need help, the help that they desperately need. How can they not address people? And they're talking about running up everybody who's without, you know, I forget the terminology. What's correct these days? The houseless, those experiencing homelessness. Because I want to be respectful. I'm not mocking the definitions.
Right. It's not trying to, I think.
It's not cleaning up the streets.
The fear is, will this criminalize homelessness and will it criminalize mental illness? And this cannot be, exactly. But this cannot be the first line. I mean, the emphasis should still be, hey, we need to make more treatment available.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it shouldn't just be for people who can afford treatment.
Well,
because a lot of times, many families who are dealing with a family member who needs help, they find out very quickly that it's hard to find a place to put them, and then it's extremely expensive. That would be the first thing. But in this case, I mean, what I'm hearing is, yes, I mean, if they are deemed to be a substantial risk to themselves mm-hmm. or to the public, and they refuse, maybe you don't give them that choice. Because so often we do turn our heads.
Right. Oh, I heard your conversation with the morning news, and some amazing points were brought up. First off, that the people on the streets who are, you know, chronically interacting with the population and showing signs of mental illness, they won't seek help, obviously, or they would have sought help. And it's time to intervene on their behalf for their well-being.
Right.
To get these folks to an evaluation. And I think it was Colleen that brought up, so long as we're not just medicating and comatosing these people into a sense of, you know, almost a walking zombie.
Right.
But to not address the situation is in itself, I think, inhumane.
I am definitely for this in theory, but I think there are a couple problems with it. Spike, you talked about defunding. One of the issues that we're dealing with was categorical defunding of mental health institutions across
Absolutely.
The United States going back to the 1980s.
Ronald Reagan.
And there was a good reason for it at the time, because a lot of those places were truly, truly awful. Now, I believe that we can correct that situation. The issue now is, where do you put people? I don't know if New York has some kind of a massive capacity for new mental health patients, because I'm looking at numbers that shows they've lost 2,000 beds over the last 20 years. I know in Washington State, it is nearly impossible to find a bed. There's a new hospital that the University of Washington is going to be building, but that's not going to come online for years and years. The other issue is your civil rights. So how do you go about diagnosing someone with a mental health condition in order to actually get them into involuntary treatment? Because you can't just have a social worker walk down the street or a police officer and be like, that guy's crazy, let's throw him in the loony bin. Right? That's not how it works. You have to have some sort of interaction with the criminal justice system in order to bring them in and actually get a diagnosis. I don't know how difficult that is, but where do you put them?
Well, here locally, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yesterday we just talked about the guy who was hired at Western State despite his long felony conviction string of crimes that he had committed, and then he apparently continued to commit crimes while working with patients at Western State. No, I mean, we're in a desperate situation here locally, and that needs to be dealt with. We just talked about Alexander J and how the state is paying all this money,
right,
or going to have to pay this money because they can't find. So clearly there is a need. But again, we can't wait till everything is perfect before you start addressing people who are potentially
they're a danger
violent.
To themselves and the rest of us as well.
Exactly.
They're a danger to society. I hate to use that cliche, but they truly are, especially those who are mentally challenged, have mental or behavioral health issues. Those are the folks that can snap and quickly turn violent. We're always talking about how nothing's being done to make our streets safer. You know, what helps a police department more? A new armored vehicle at about $240,000 or whatever they cost, or maybe some resources and mental health assistance and some new facilities. Even temporary. We could put up tents for COVID treatments. Let's put up tents with beds for people who need mental health assessments, if nothing else.
Right. Listener Nikki just texted in and says, it's dangerous to go the route like Russia does, which is just lock up. We need to approach the matter with actual professionals evaluating. And what is the definition for at risk? And those are things that
absolutely, professionals should be brought in, experts
exactly.
should be brought in to
exactly.
assess these situations.
But
I
think to do nothing is not the answer. I think to say we can't even try it because, I mean, you know that this is going to be challenged.
Right. It's going to be hard. That doesn't mean you don't undertake the effort.
Exactly. Okay, still ahead. This is going to be a story that Spike's going
to
break down
to say
for
it's
us.
Close to home for me doesn't
okay.
begin to do
Would
it justice.
Would you agree with this statement? There are two kinds of people. People who bring their cell phones in to the bathroom with them, and even while they're going potty, mm-hmm. keep scrolling. And then there are people who say they don't.
Who claim they don't. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Okay. But now there are doctors who are weighing in or saying, you can't do this for more than 10 minutes. And we'll tell you why that is coming up next on the G and Ursula Show. This is the G and Ursula Show.
Yeah,
Spike
boy.
O'Neill
yeah,
is
buddy.
In. And we're going to be talking about what we bring into the men's or women's room with
us. But first, we're going to announce today's Seahawks code word. For your chance to win a pair of tickets, see the Hawks take on the Carolina Panthers December 11th at Lumen Field. We'll pull three winners today from today's entries. Not three qualifiers, three winners, each with a pair of tickets. Learn more at mynorthwest.com/win and listen to Cairo News Radio all week long for your chance to win Seahawks tickets take on the Panthers on the 11th. Yes, this is a story that came up, and it's near and dear to my heart because I too, am guilty. I feel terrible, you know, chastising anybody about what I do myself, so I want to own that first and foremost. But there's a point where you can abuse any privilege. And we're talking about folks who take their personal device. And from this article from the Seattle Times, I thought it was New York Times. God, can you imagine what those people do? About folks who take their phone and their gaming device, their Switch or whatever handheld gaming device, into the bathroom to spend personal time. I mean, I get it. It's not a new phenomenon. I was raised in a house where, God forbid, the old man got a hold of the Sunday paper before he went to the restroom because we were a one-bathroom house, and you learn control as a young adult in my old man's house.
I mean, it's like pages, you're knocking on the door. Come
on. It's like a scene from a Christmas Story. So doctors have said most people spend between 5 to 10 minutes in the restroom with their phone, many longer. That's the average. So many people spend way more than that. They're reading, they're scrolling social media, news sites. They're playing games.
But okay, when you heard this, though, was your first reaction, oh, gross.
Yes.
To think about.
Yes.
What your phone is being contaminated with.
Well, we've all heard stories about what's on your phone. You know, imagine now carrying it into an airborne fecal remnant dome and exposing your phone to. And then there's the office restroom, which is another whole story. If you're at home, it's just unhealthy for you to spend more than 10 minutes sitting on the privy while you scroll the world and become smarter or have more fun.
Okay, can I blow that up for a second? The whole
sure.
it's gross and disgusting. First of all, you can use the bathroom while you're on your phone, and then you put the phone down
into another room,
and you clean up on the counter,
okay.
And then you wash your hands,
yes.
And you pick your phone back up. No germ transfer. Also, this whole idea that because there is bacteria present, it is a gross environment. Like, they do these studies. Hey, what's on your money? What's on the door handle? Right?
Yeah.
And we found 47 different kinds of viruses and bacteria.
How you doing, chef? I was in your toilet a moment ago.
Not an amount that would make you sick. It's there. It's not going to make you sick, generally.
It makes me sick even thinking about it. What are you talking about?
Okay, so, and then lastly,
that's the funny thing, though, because
hold on.
in this...
Let him finish.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Just lastly, I will defend to the death my right to stay in the bathroom for as long as I want. You're talking about your dad?
Yeah.
I am a dad now.
You go,
and
boy.
This is my private time. It is constitutionally protected that I can spend as much time on the toilet as I need.
Yes, it's your home, of course. But let's talk about the office for just a second. Because I have an anecdotal tale, a true tale. Okay. I used to work in a building at a different radio station, different radio company that had one restroom on each floor. And it was a one stall shared restroom for the floor. And I went into a restroom and there was somebody in the stall. So, okay, I'm going to come back, come later, still in the stall. Okay. Come back a third time, still in the stall. And I will stop for a minute and I hear this. On a keyboard.
Yes.
And I did what I always do, a shoot check so I can shame you later in public. But then I just casually mentioned, listen, if you want to let me know where your cubicle is, I'll go do my business there since you're doing your business here. I mean, there's an element of consideration. I do have a solution. I don't want to be just bitching and moaning.
I want to hear your solution, but I just have to mention, is it sad that we're even having to talk about bringing your cell phone that you
your
cannot
Game
be
Boy.
Disconnected
right no
for long enough to go to the bathroom that basically the thought is that all of us do this?
Well, but to Chef's point, though, that is a time where you can multitask. You can surf, respond to an email, get the latest news headlines, find out how they're doing in Ukraine, or check a score, check a World Cup score, whatever. But for 5-10 minutes, by the way, the doctor's in the story, and it's at the Seattle Times.com. It's very, very, very unhealthy for you to leave your body in this position for extended periods of time. It can slow down your body's natural processes for dealing with the functions that keep us all alive and upright.
Oh, gosh, are we going to do, like, the squatty potty evangelism next?
No. I'm just talking about a time frame. So my solution is this. And we're just not talking about home, chef. I get it. That's the last true throne for the dying king of manhood, okay? But in the office, where you are sharing facilities with other people, I propose a clock, a running clock above your stall for the public to see that starts when you open the door and close the door behind you. A 10-minute digital clock that counts up. And that's so you're not caught unawares. At 30 seconds till 10 minutes, another clock will start inside the stall to let you know. You've got 30 seconds. Wrap this up.
Okay, you know what happens? Then you're going to have shy bladder. And the other reason shy bladder. Because you're going to feel stress.
Well, I after mean, 10 just, minutes, you that's, about, that's on
well,
you.
The gastroenterologist.
It's on you. I'm not kidding.
The quote from the gastroenterologist was, it's not just slowing down other bodily functions, but could also cause hemorrhoids. Hello?
Oh, yeah, with the hemis. Not the kind in your Dodge Ram Charger. No. So anyway, at 30 seconds, you get a countdown clock. It starts to flash at 10. At 3 seconds, the door springs open beyond your control. And at 0, it becomes a bidet. You know what I'm saying? It's not going down anymore. It's coming out. So you're going to finish up. And let the other people in your office have access to the facilities because we all need them.
You really thought this one through.
This is close to my heart.
You know what's really gross?
What?
The Reader's Digest. It's not like our phone is new. But the Reader's Digest everybody picks up in the bathroom.
Stays in there and collects the airborne.
Farside cartoons.
Dog-eared magazine. Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Okay, still ahead. What's new at 10? This is the G and Ursula Show with Spike O'Neill.